Why is it so many of us paint, draw, or in some way turn to creativity in tough times? When we're told to stay at home and we're required to hold our friends and family literally at arm's length, why do we look to the arts to make things better? We're artists and filmmakers Ian Forsyth
and Jane Pollard, and this is the second episode of our Somerset House podcast, Coping Mechanisms. In mid-March, as lockdown stunned the UK and we found ourselves with unexpected time on our hands, we set about making an epic list of all the good ideas and things we could do. And then we did absolutely none of them. But we began to notice that some of our friends were organising online activities that anyone could join in with. So what is it that makes some people act on their good ideas? In this episode, we talked to two incredible characters, Noel Fielding and Sue Tilley. Both have been running art classes of sorts.
Good afternoon. Welcome to my art class.
Hey, kids, let's do this. All right, it's art club at 3 o'clock.
I hope there's someone there watching. So let us know if you are. Write your names down. You know what I'm like. I like to see what's going on.
Noel Fielding rose to fame as one half of the Mighty Boosh. He's a comedian, writer, actor, artist, musician, and now presenter of a much-loved TV show about making cakes in a tent. We met Noel when we asked him to play Alice Cooper in a comedy drama we were making for Sky Arts. The show tells the almost true story of how Salvador Dali came to create a holographic image of Alice Cooper. It turned out to be one of the most fun shoots we'd ever done.
Noel likes to spend as much time as he can in his studio painting, so when lockdown hit, he launched Noel's Art Club on Twitter on Saturday afternoon.
I like all those things. It was a little bit accidental. I used to do a little art club about 4 years ago, maybe longer. I did it a couple of times, really. Just, I think I maybe did it just on Twitter before Instagram. Bob Mortimer's kids, one of his kids was into it. And a few people, I just said, right, we're all going to draw Elvis. And some people did it. What I liked about it was that, you know, that everyone's doing it at the same time. There's something about that that's quite nice. It's quite an interesting way to use social media, even though you don't see it. You see the work, but you don't see them doing it. But you all know there's like a buzz that comes from everyone doing something at the same time. And it's a bit frantic for me because I try to be in it and do it and look at everything at the same time and judge it and get it or guest judge. There was something quite nice about, I think because I speak in such a stupid way, I think on my Instagram I said something like, all right, it's art club at 3 o'clock. Okay, kids, let's do this. In a sort of Keith Richards, you know, hey cats, hey kids, let's do this. Not meaning it's for kids. But I think everyone in England is so literal that they went, oh, this is for kids. He's running this for kids. So it was like, yeah, man, let's do this, kids. I just meant anyone. And so lots of kids did it. And then lots of adults did it with their kids together and enjoyed that time. And then lots of adults let their kids do it and had a break. So I had this wave of people going, oh, thanks so much, Noel. I had 2 hours where my kids just sat at the table and did your art club and I haven't had a break for all week. Thank you. And I was like, oh, right. So it's like a creche. It's basically like, I'm basically running a nursery now, which wasn't the idea. I was just trying to make something positive, really. And then people started going, this is getting me through lockdown. And it helped me because it gives you some structure, because there's no structure. And then you go, right, once a week I have to make a playlist, choose a theme, do some artwork, pick some artwork, go through everything, try not to leave anyone out, you know. What I look back on it now is it's quite an amazing diary, actually, of the time, because I think on the second one I did, the first one I just did love, because everyone was so weirdly freaked out. It was like, right, we need to pull together, you know. But the second one I did, our favourite things from Italy, because Italy were really struggling at that point. And it was really difficult to even word that, to even put that out as a thing, because it's such delicate. You don't want to be glib or you don't want to be... it's so hard because everyone was so fractured and sort of tense that it was tricky to know what you could or couldn't do, you know. And so it was a little bit of just support to sort of show us supporting them and all the great things we love about Italy and some of all the art that comes from there. But yeah, it is weird because when I go back to look through the different ones, you can see where people are very frustrated or where people are a bit more, right, we're into lockdown now, we can get through this. And then there's bits where, at the end, where people are losing their minds a little bit, you know.
You see it in the work, you see it in the...
You can feel, when I always did a little film saying, hey, so today is this, you can see it when you look at those, you know whether it's, you know, right, okay, well, I'm quite enjoying being stuck in my house. I've done lots of things that I didn't think I would do in my house. And then week nine, you're starting to go, oh, please, is this ever going to end? It's like, because I think what was quite scary about it in the beginning, when the death, especially when the death toll was so high, it was, there was a few weeks where people just didn't know if you could get it under control. Or I don't know about you guys, but we started to hear of people that had it, then we started to know people whose family or friends had it. It started to get closer and closer and closer, and you just didn't know where that was going to end, really. It was like, the only things we'd ever seen like this were in films, where you go, oh, I knew, I'd heard of a friend who had it, and then suddenly it was my mate's brother's got it, and then suddenly it's my friend's got it. So it got a bit scary for a while, I think. And then it sort of plateaued a little bit, and then people started to feel optimistic again. So, but I don't really keep a diary, but I find my sketchbooks are a good diary for what's going on in my life. You can usually tell if I'm having a good or a bad time through my drawings or what I'm doing. And so in a weird way, the art club was, yeah, it was quite a nice little sort of diary.
One of the things we started doing when lockdown kind of became a reality, and, you know, we made this massive list of things that we were going to achieve during lockdown, which I think lots of people did. And, of course, everything is still on the list and nothing has happened.
We should all burn those lists at the end of lockdown.
Because one of the things that we always sort of say, oh, we haven't got time to do that, is we had this massive list of films we wanted to see. And we kept saying, oh, it'd be great if we had, if only we had time to watch that. And suddenly lockdown felt like the thing it gave you was... time.
I feel like it's given people a lot of space. My painting's got much better because I think I am not in a rush all the time, and I always felt like I had to be fast, and I've got 2 hours, I've got to go, I've got to make this count, I've got to get back, and, you know, I've got to be back by 6. There was never any time because my studio is a bit of a way away as well from Highgate, so it's like 40 minutes there, so you've got to make it count, and then it's 40 minutes back, and it's like, you realise how much time you spend travelling around London. Like, I go from Highgate in the morning and I go to Soho to see my agent, and I'd go to East London to paint, and I'd come back to Highgate, and then that night I'd go, you just realise you're just spending all this time running around, and actually how much work are you getting done? Not much. Whereas in lockdown you can't really go anywhere, so suddenly you can be more patient about the work you're making and a bit more, and have a bit more, I feel like with me I've had a lot more thought about what I'm painting because I haven't had the time before. So there's been a lot of sitting down looking at paintings and working out methodically how I can get better, rather than just coming in and then off and then coming in again, you know.
I mean, you have turned to art since you were pretty young. Why? What is it about art? What do you find in it?
I think it was the first thing I was ever good at. I think I was quite good at drawing, and from a very young age, like 5 or something, you know, 3 or 4, I don't know. Well, it's one of those things, you're at school and then you do a drawing in there, you look at everyone else's drawing and you go, wow, these people can't draw at all. What's happening there? We're drawing birds. You seem to have drawn a Hoover with eyes. It's like, people would literally go, oh, you can draw. And then funny enough, when I was at primary school, I used to make money from drawing like mad pages out of Mad magazine or something, or record covers for like 50p, you know? So it's like you draw like an Iron Maiden record cover for someone for like £1 or whatever. It was probably more like 50p back then. So it was like probably my first job, do you know what I mean? And first thing that I was good at. I always thought one day it'd be really nice to paint again, like Captain Beefheart, to a level where you have an exhibition every year and you're selling some work and you can say, this is what I do, you know, and you can dedicate your... And it's a bit easier, you know, for me now. Now I've got kids as well. I'm not 100% comfortable being in the limelight all the time. And also, you know, it's a rocky road being in the limelight. There's always going to be, every couple of years, you're going to get smashed.
We were flicking through the telly last night and we landed on some, it was evidently from the 80s or something. Someone was painting and describing what they were painting. It was a landscape. And both of us just like went, that never happens anymore.
Was it Bob Ross?
Let's do it.
Is it the guy with the beard and the afro? Yeah, he's amazing because, I mean, his paintings are, you know, they're like technically amazing he knows how to use oil, but they're kind of quite bland landscapes, aren't they? But his vibe is so nice, and he's just like relaxed. I think he's just relaxed, isn't he? And he's like, we're going to make a tree, it's a forest, and you can put as many trees as you like in. It's your forest, no one can tell you what to do. This is your painting. It's like...
And also the most popular is the little snow-covered mountains. Now take the knife, you have that little roll of paint on there, and push very hard, very hard. All you're trying to do here is push in a basic shape.
It's almost like he stepped into that painting. Me and Nigel talked about making a show where a guy like that, a sort of, you know, he does a TV paint, and then he goes inside the painting and has an adventure, and then he comes back out at the end of the show. So he'll, you know, he'll start painting this thing, and then he gets sucked in, and at the end he comes back out. We like that idea because there is something about, it's so slow, the pace of that, but there's something mesmerizing about it. You can't stop watching.
It sort of became quite fashionable for a little bit, didn't it? That sort of slow TV.
Yeah.
Going down canals.
There's an amazing show called Fishing with John. Have you seen that? With John Lurie. You know John Lurie from the Lounge Lizards, who's in Jim Jarmusch films. He's in Down by Law. And he did a fishing show where he did one with Tom Waits, one with Willem Dafoe, two with Dennis Hopper, one with Matt Damon, and one with Jim Jarmusch. And they're amazing because they're like interview shows, really, but they do actually genuinely go fishing, and they're very funny. You should check them out. I think they're on the Criterion Collection, but they're really good. But there's something about how slow and gentle and beautiful they are. I think Bake Off has a little bit of that, weirdly.
I think the act of baking and the act of painting share quite a lot. That notion of you have to kind of give yourself over to them. You enter into a different space and time feels different.
Hi everyone, welcome to the art class today, which I'm very excited about. Hope you're excited too.
Sue Tilly is perhaps best known as the subject of Lucian Freud's Benefits Supervisor Sleeping, which became the most expensive painting by a living artist when it sold in 2008 for $17.2 million. Sue was a close friend of the late fashion designer and performance artist Lee Bowery. Since retiring from the Dole office, Sue now lives in St. Leonard's, where she draws and paints. We're currently developing a film about Sue and can't wait until the pandemic is over and we can meet up again.
So I used to do it every week in the Fountain Pub, and we'd had a break and we were just making all the plans for the new ones. And it was so popular, I had so many people wanting to come. We were going to do an afternoon and an evening. We were getting all excited. Then this happened. I thought, oh, well, you know. And then Wayne, who runs the pub, told me that this guy had been in to see him and they were setting up a local television station in Hastings and they might want to do things in the pub. So they thought my art class would be really good. But then the lockdown got even worse, so the pub shut. I said, I'll just do it from home. And so plus points are, with the art class online, you can have loads more people come. You know, whoever wants to do it from all over the world can do it, which is good. But I really, really miss the interaction with the actual people, because I really love just going around and seeing what they were doing. And that's really why I have to have someone I can talk to while it's going on, because that passes the time, because otherwise I can't see what they're drawing. So that's how it became what it was. Because in my other class, it was more talking about what they're drawing, and because I can see them all the time and I'm there. So it wasn't really a chit-chat with the model, it was more about what they were working on. As well as an art class, it was a little sort of social society as well, and people made loads of new friends and I made new friends, and a lot of them come to the online art class as well. It keeps them in touch with each other.
So you've spent over the years hundreds and hundreds of hours sitting for Lucian Freud. What's the feedback you've had back from your models and from their hour of sitting, and what's the difference with the models you were using in the pub?
Oh, in the pub, I just used anyone who wanted to do it. They're all interesting, but like, I didn't really have to have an interesting story because I wasn't going to talk to them. They were just there to model. I mean, lots of them did have interesting stories, but that wasn't the point of that. But I love this as well because I choose people I think have got an interesting story to tell.
Oh, Elvirus Mackie Carmen wants to know, yeah, what's the best concert you ever went to?
Oh, hi. Best concert that I've ever been to. Well, there have been so many. I actually went quite recently, actually, with Jerry Stafford, we went to see Sinead O'Connor at the Shepherd's Bush Empire. I'm not saying that's the best concert, but Sinead's voice was beyond.
What's more surprised you over the weeks doing the class?
That people still come, the same people come every week, and they send me messages going, oh, it's the highlight of our week, we love it so much. I'm going, oh! And then people I know, they get their family, because they're staying with their families, they've got their families involved, and the whole families do it together, which is lovely. And I mean, some of them, really, they're not the world's best drawers, but it's the fact that they make an effort. And sometimes, some people, first of all, I thought, oh, they're fantastic. Then you can see every week they've got their style, they've obviously been taught, and so they do the same thing every week. But I love the ones where they're really random and they can't find what they've got. So they haven't got any red paint, so they use lipstick or they do a collage and stick a bit on. Or yesterday, someone actually stuck safety pins where the safety pins were in their T-shirt. That's what, I love it when they go off-piste and just do bizarre things. I'm not a fusspot about art. I think anyone can say they're an artist. And I hate, and on my art class, I always say, I'm not going to teach you to draw. Number one, I can't really draw very well myself. But number two, I hate it when everyone, you can tell they've been to some art class and everyone, what they draw looks the same. I like seeing their personalities in their drawings. And you find that a lot of people's drawings, whoever they draw looks like them, the person who drew it, because that's, you know, what they, where they are. What are you laughing at?
Oh, wow, is that true? That you see the person, like you see the person who drew it rather than the person
there depicting. But it does kind of look like them sometimes. Well, usually it's about 60 or 70 people listening in, and not because some people get a bit carried away with the chit-chat, so they just sit listening to the chit-chat. So I think we got about 30 pictures back yesterday.
There's something quite interesting about the way it's framed as well, because usually when you're in front of a model, a life model, you're choosing
And you can move around.
And you're choosing the frame, yeah. And here it's... the frame's there, that, you know, you kind of just need to work exactly with what you've got. You moving around doesn't make it any different.
And no one's ever going to criticise. We're always ever so nice. We always say everything's lovely. But everything is. I think that anything anyone draws is worthwhile. Because, as I always say to them, children can draw before they can write, can't they? They don't have any qualms. They just start drawing. So everyone's got it inside them. That's why I tell everyone they're fantastic. But most of them are, I'm not lying, you know what I mean? They really are marvellous. And I just think it's fantastic that they've done it and they've looked at something and realised how things work and, you know.
Life drawing's a killer though, isn't it? I remember doing it for 30 years and hating it. And you can't move either, which is a nightmare. I did Portrait Artist of the Year. They do it online now, and I did that with an artist, and it was... We just chatted, and it was 4 hours, so we were just chatting. It's a long time, but you can't move too much either, so that calms you down. So the energy's quite low as well, because they're concentrating on painting you and you're trying to be still, so it's very mellow, sort of. But I guess in a weird way, reality TV, a lot of reality TV is real life and quite not much happening. Because everything's so fast now, like dramas and Netflix and film is so, you know, it's so crazy. And I started doing transcendental meditation because I thought it would help me, and I don't do it as much as I should do, and it does just relieve some of the stress. You do need to get rid of some of that stress sometimes, and then you can have better ideas. But we do resist that a little bit in this country. We're not 100% comfortable, I don't think, with things like meditation. I'm not sure about that. I don't know. I'm not sure. Paul McCartney said an amazing thing about meditation. He said, what's beautiful about it is if you learn it, you have it for the rest of your life, and you don't have to do it all the time, but you can do it when you choose to or when you need to, and it never goes away. You can't. It's there for you, which is amazing. I feel like that sometimes I'm like, do you know what? I'm going to meditate for a week, and it does always help. It's like one of those things, though, like jogging. You're never going to do it all the time because it's, you know, you got coffee to drink in the morning instead. There's things like Cocoa Pops.
Unless you're David Lynch, and then you can do the meditation and the coffee, right?
Yes, David Lynch does it, doesn't he? He's quite... And that film that he made recently, the short film with a monkey in it, that's my favourite thing I've seen in a long time. I thought that was so brilliant. I loved that. It's just totally everything about what we like, you know, and it made me actually go, oh, that's what I like doing. I forgot. It's easy to forget who you are. The lockdowns made people forget what they, it's reminded people what they like, you know, in terms of art and in terms of what books you like and what things you like and what music you like. It reminds you, it's like, cause when you're a student, you've got a lot of time to do that, to decide all the things you like, and then life gets in the way and you don't have any time anymore. It's like you're just busy making your own stuff. And then this has made everyone go, oh, I used to really like that music, or I used to love this book, or oh, I haven't seen that film. And all those things are quite important to put into your head again, because then they change your perception, or what, especially what you're making. Do you know what I mean? So it's, I think this has been quite a good way of us all remembering what we loved and what we liked listening to. And
it feels like somehow we've got to take that lesson forward. I feel like we've seen how important the arts are to our souls, to our ability to kind of cope. That has to tell us something about, you know, what as a society we value, and then where to put money, where to focus education.
It's a terrifying irony that lockdown has, on the one hand, I think, given lots of people the opportunity to reconnect with the arts in the broadest sense. Surviving through creativity has been a factor for many, many people. Yet the same lockdown is the thing that is probably going to close down theatres.
Pub, where we started as the Mighty Boosh, the Hen and Chickens, is struggling to stay open, you know, and it's a little theatre above, a 58-seat theatre, you know, and we sort of, it was so important for us that we did it on a Monday night. Monday night was the graveyard slot. Like, nobody was interested in going out to a pub on a Monday night because they'd had a big weekend, and there's only 58 seats, tiny, it didn't matter if it was half full, but it was where we got our Edinburgh shows together, you know, and it was a tiny little theatre, a tiny little dressing room. Beautiful little place, really, and like, I feel like it started so many people's careers, especially in comedy, and the fact that that might be disappearing because they just can't keep it open and they might change it into flats or whatever, it's devastating. Because also when I did my art club, I was inundated with people saying, I haven't drawn since school, I haven't done any art since I was 12, I'm 46, I've really enjoyed this and I'm going to keep doing it, you know. And that was because it is therapy and it is meditation. And it is something that a lot of people enjoyed but never had time for in their lives. And, you know, carrying a sketchbook around with you was a thing you had to do as an art student, otherwise you were told off. But it's fine for normal people to do that, you know. You can be on the tube and just do a drawing of someone opposite. It's fine. It's, anyone can do it, but it feels like people go, well, that was school. I didn't go down that path. I'm not allowed to.
But the same kind of muscles of imagination would be just as useful in so many different, in boardrooms, in loads of different kind of ways, that ability to kind of think creatively.
How many jobs can you do where you're having to do that kind of thinking all the time, you know?
But you think about things like, you know, the Dominic Cummings letter, speech, explanation was like an incredible exercise in creative writing. To have managed to sort of back-channeled every single like possible thing that he could have been, you know, every time he was spotted there was kind of an explanation that explained why he just happened to have to stop the car at that moment. And like, that was a hugely creative exercise.
And to end up with eye test, you know, I was testing my eyes, was a massive leap, really, wasn't it? If you wrote that in a sitcom or a film, you'd be going, is anyone going to buy this eye test? We would have been like, there's got to be a better reason for why he was in a car if he couldn't see. Surely you wouldn't get in a car if you got... There is a point where people go, where you're allowed to be imaginative as a child, and then when you get older, it's harder. You have to find a place if you want to keep doing that.
Coping Mechanisms is a Somerset House podcast, created by Ian Forsyth and Jane Pollard, produced by Eleanor Scott and Daniel Brewer. Music by Bernholtz. Thank you to all the artists who have contributed to the series. To listen to more and to subscribe to the Somerset House podcast, search Somerset House on your favourite podcast app. Over and out.